hard-hitting medical truth, cutting through conflict and confusion to the understanding you're searching for. Join Dr. Peter McCullough, world-renowned medical expert and practicing physician, for this edition of the McCullough Report. Your life may depend on it.
Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. We have a great show for you this week, and I want to kick it off with an audio play of a video that I don't think is going to last too long on YouTube. I think it will be censored and scrubbed, although we do have it safely backed up. But it has an array of scientists who have rendered their opinions throughout the pandemic, and specifically on the mass vaccination program and where this is heading. And one of the most common questions I have is, Dr. McCullough, what is all this about? What is behind all this? Is this the respiratory virus and just a completely fearful and confused and inept response to try to mass vaccinate into a viral syndrome that's highly contagious with failed vaccines? Or is the vaccine program really about something else? Is there an agenda? Is there something behind the vaccine that's other than COVID-19? Now, people have said this is conspiracy or conspiracy theories or hypotheses. And I've heard some interesting comments on this, that the difference between a conspiracy theory and a conspiracy is simply what turns out to be true. And sometimes that's over time. Some have been so bold to claim that this isn't a conspiracy theory, that in fact, it is a conspiracy. So let's listen together as we hear this.
Who have planned this? It's all planned. Now, why they planned this, I don't know. And I don't even think I want to know.
This system is being put in place using lies, and it's being put in place using lies for some purpose, and I believe that purpose is complete totalitarian control. And I think the purpose of that is going to be mass depopulation.
One of our problems here is the assumption that this is like every other vaccine we've ever seen, and it's not.
It's the greatest experiment that has ever been performed in the history of medicine, and it's being performed on human beings. It's just an incredible thought.
So all of this started to come together, and we started to get kind of a sick feeling in our stomachs that, wait a minute, this is science gone bad here. None of this is supposed to be happening. The CDC has never otherwise explained these deaths, and they are so tightly related to the vaccine.
50% of healthcare providers are absolutely not getting this injection. We don't trust the data. The fox guarded the hen house. The companies did their own data. There were no independent observer groups.
You should disregard all announcements about case rates in your community, because they're completely fraudulent.
The very inventor of the PCR test, Nobel Prize winner Kerry Mullis, said this test in itself is not a diagnosis.
And with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody.
But they said we're being pressured in-house to add COVID to the diagnostic list when we think it has nothing to do with the actual cause of death.
As a physician, I received an email last week from the Department of Health coaching me on how to fill out death certificates.
It's another level now of criminality.
There's a lot of other doctors who
feel
the same
way.
Well, they're too frightened to speak up. And as soon as that happens, a notification, and you're in the front of the medical board.
Astonishing. Dr. Robert Malone is a vaccine expert. He is the inventor of mRNA technology. He's undergone systematic attack. His history is literally being erased online. These fact-checking groups, for example, factcheck.org, they're funded by an organization that holds over $1.8 billion of stock in a vaccine company.
Once I was censored, I feel like I've kind of gone into this other world, and now I'm surrounded by people that it's kind of normal to have their work talked about in a strange way.
Sent me there to cover the COVID treatments at that hospital. I just wasn't supposed to ask that question. The viewers are being deceived by a carefully crafted narrative.
They are trying to push a narrative that is not based on the decades of immunology.
Nobody's in the hospital. How is that possible in a medical pandemic?
That's fake news, that's why.
People have turned to Facebook to share their stories and experiences. with one group reaching almost 65,000 members, it was removed overnight for no apparent reason.
The victims of this vaccine, they're not being able to tell their story.
The censoring has been going on for well over a year. It's well documented. It's unequivocal.
TikTok is taking down all of my sound so that you guys can't hear my story.
The Great Barrington Declaration, authored and signed by three of the world's leading experts in epidemiology, infectious diseases, and vaccines.
We've got to the point where scientists such as yourselves need to kind of gather for secret meetings in houses to come out with declarations of dissent.
Are you of the same opinion?
I don't think I can answer that question.
Why not?
Anyone who speaks out against this line of policy is shut down. I basically have to be in line with the government line.
Do you want your physicians and scientists, their voices suppressed? We're polarized right now. We're polarized.
And threaten investigation and discipline for any physicians who express any of the negative aspects of any of these interventions, no matter what the evidence says.
It is great!
You're not the first doctor I've heard from who maybe got unusual visits from the state or, you know, basically got a lot of pushback.
You have to realize the number of doctors and scientists who are saying no to all this outnumbers those who say yes.
And if this is the mountain, if this is the hill where I get nailed on, I will get nailed on it. I don't care. You can report me to the board, you can kill me, you can do whatever, but I'm not going to let Americans die.
75 years ago, Hermann Göring testified at the Nuremberg trials, and he was asked, how did you make the German people go along with all this? And he said, it's an easy thing. The only thing a government needs to make people into slaves is fear. You can do this in a Nazi regime. You can do it in a socialist regime. You can do it in a communist regime. You can do it in a monarchy and a democracy.
We, the Germans, are asking this question, how it happens in the 1930s. And a lot of people are now getting a sense how it happened.
We're held hostage to more and more mutations that can be used to manipulate us over and over again and take away our freedoms.
We've used these tactics in other countries to manipulate, divide and conquer. Now we're watching our own government, our own military use them against us. Men of our unit and our service believe that we're pointing our weapons in the wrong direction. This time now the tyranny is against us and our people, and we can't see it because it's on our home soil where it's never been before.
We need to start looking at ourselves as officers and thinking, is what I'm doing right? You don't get to just say, I'm following orders. And if that costs you your job, so be it. At least you'll be able to look at yourself in the mirror at night.
They start enforcing the communist state through the vaccine passport. Please, Australia, do not move to any goalpost. The second you do, they start to build the fascist state.
In Australia, people have had it too good for too long, and they see these communist countries and they think, there's no way that could happen here.
We are the most locked down country in the world.
There's over 50,000 people in here!
Massive protests. You know, the media said it was only 3,500 people.
What we saw today were 3,500 very selfish buffets.
The mainstream media is never, ever, ever going to be on our side because they are owned and controlled by the very people we are fighting against.
They've identified that area as being a really strong area. Strong men, strong morals, strong customs.
You are the toughest, you have the strongest family, community connections, religious connections. You guys are unbreakable, and they know that they target and break you first, it makes it easier for them to break the rest of us.
Stand the fuck up. Don't be the reason why our future generations look back and think, where the heck were they?
This is the time. There is not going to be another time unless we shake this down.
Now there's a national rally, Peace, Freedom, and Human Rights in Australia-wide, Saturday, August 21st. That will be at the time of this posting. Civil disobedience becomes a sacred duty when the state becomes lawless or corrupt. Dr. Gandhi gave that quote. You heard a tremendous medley of speakers, and this was an Australian production since Australia has been so hard hit with this wave of totalitarianism that really has found, in a sense, the excuse of COVID-19 as a respiratory illness, and now the ill-fated ineffective and unsafe COVID-19 as the instrument by which oppression can be put onto a population. I wrote down the speakers, and you need to understand that these are some of the best people in science, in medicine, and in media that exist right now. And I am not alone in my great concerns about what's happening in the world. Dr. Bhakti, Yaden, Malone, Cole, Mullis, Erickson, Jensen, Brighthope, Elijah, Rise, Hecker, Califf, Kirsch, Koldorf, Bhattacharya, Bokra, Bridle, Phillips, Emmanuel, Kennedy, Schoening, and Kaufman. This is a convergence of extremely concerned individuals that understand that this is a respiratory illness. We have a treatment for this. We treated patients early as an outpatient. We avoid hospitalization and death. We can do far better on the inpatient treatment if the medications are much more intensified and we carry these successful principles as outpatient treatment into the inpatient realm. If we're able to do this, we can save lives. We can avoid hospitalization and death. Now we have to deal with the menace of the vaccine. And we've been on this program week after week now about the vaccine in terms of what's going on. Is it successful? Is it safe? Who should take it? Now, this program has spun out of control. And in Australia, people can't move more than 5 kilometers. They can't cross state lines. There have been far more people in Australia who have been killed or died after the vaccine, where the vaccine is a proximal cause of death, as opposed to those who have actually died with COVID-19. The vaccine is far worse as a treatment or a prevention than the disease itself, and the Australian data bear that out. In the United States, we really have arrested, to a large degree, the mortality with COVID-19. It still happens in the hospital with ineffective hospital treatment in the absence of early treatment. But I have to tell you, I've been so busy in the last few weeks. I have multiple people who have been treated at home, very high-risk people. We're managing them with oxygen at home, multiple drugs, getting them through the illness, saving their lives. People are enormously grateful for our work, and the hero doctors, and they really need mention. There's an entire group of doctors and supportive people on a listserv called C19 in the United States. There is the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, a hero group, aapsonline.org. Go to their website and see the materials, list of treating doctors. The Frontline Critical Care Consortium and their innovative protocols, Math Plus and IMath Plus. And then the American frontline doctors that really have taken the charge with respect to protection of civil rights. They also have a large body of treating doctors and telemedicine services. These are the heroes of the American pandemic who are trying to treat patients and trying to navigate through this difficult time. The public health stance of simply don't treat the illness, don't even mention treatment, and then blast people with this vaccine and now blast people with boosters. We have rates of vaccination that are basically at a standstill now since April. There's been no advancement of the program. Certainly in America, about half of the country says they don't want the vaccine. 80% of those in Japan and elsewhere. We have a real fracturing of thoughts in the United Kingdom. In Germany, their view is that children should not be vaccinated. The vaccines could cause harm and certainly can't help them. You know, that's been my view based on the analysis. And in the United States, we're pushing forward with vaccination and the menace of the vaccine being pushed through schools, colleges, and now employers. And in the next few months, we're coming down to an American showdown, a test of wills. Are we going to be breakable or unbreakable? And the only thing we can do is give an honest assessment in the media. I can tell you that physicians like myself and other leaders, we very much at this point in time feel hunted, meaning that through a variety of mechanisms, people are going after us and they're trying to threaten our freedom. They're trying to threaten our rights to scientific and medical discourse, trying to affect our rights of free speech and our ability to form our own opinions. Those who set out against us would have the strongest desires to never hear another word from me again. So what would you do if you were in my shoes? If you had a standing in medicine, you had moral, ethical, and clinical authority, if you will, to strongly express your opinions rooted in science, rooted in the fundamental understandings of what's going on, and scholarship, the ability to keep digging in the medical literature, reaching across the world to understand this illness, understand the epidemiology, the pathobiology, and the treatment. Well, I can tell you what I'm doing is I accept these press interviews, and there are fearless media personalities, and I've gotten to know a lot of them, and I have a great respect for the media. One of them is Dan Ball, and his wife is the producer, Peyton Drew. And I can tell you, Dan is a young man. He's a military veteran, and he's on Real America. He's got a terrific show. And Dan has me on, and let me let you be the judge of the data and how I present it in terms of my opinions.
COVID mess and the mask and the vax mandates, just the beginning. Biden administration now pushing that all Americans get vaccinated, right? Top of health officials now saying they're authorizing booster shots down the road for Americans. Americans will be eligible for the booster shot 8 months after being fully vaccinated with either the Pfizer, the Moderna, or the Johnson & Johnson one. This, just last week, health officials approved booster shots for just the immunocompromised, so folks that have a compromised immune. But now, nope, it's coming for everybody. Shot, shot, shot. These new rules and mandates are just asinine. They're not following the science and the data. And a doctor that agrees with me, and most likely many of you at home, joins me now, Dr. Peter McCullough. Doc, thanks for coming back on the program. It's going to be a short and an easy one. All this new stuff coming out right before the news from Afghanistan broke, and it was what? It's double masking in Philadelphia. It's a third shot, maybe a fourth shot. It's vaccine passports now in San Francisco and New York. It's all more, more, more. More shots, more mandates, more BS. So I just want it real simple, Doc, because you always keep it with the science. Is all of this stuff needed?
You know, it's not needed. I think it's ill-advised. We have data now of vaccine failures that are really pouring in. And I'll just read you the data. The Israeli authorities are telling us that we have 86% of patients with COVID-19 in Israel, fully 15,634 cases. 86% of them are fully vaccinated.
Wow.
The CDC, Dan, the CDC has told us July 26th, the CDC had, they didn't have all the cases, but what they were solid cases reported to them, they had 6587 fully vaccinated Americans hospitalized, and sadly 19% of them died. I mean, these are obvious signals that the vaccine is not fully protective, and it can't be our only method of responding to the pandemic.
Doc, last week I had Dr. Dan Stock on from Indiana, who a lot of folks, he's gaining national attention from his viral video where he spoke up at a school board meeting about masks with kids and mandatory vaccines. He brought something up on the program I wanted a second opinion on, because I've had COVID. I don't want to take the shot. I think the shot will do me more good, or more harm rather than good, being I have the natural immunity. He said that could these shots, the vaccine, possibly be creating some of the new variants, because we're seeing, as you just pointed out with the science and the data, folks that are getting the shot then still get COVID and they're still transmitting it. Can that create a new variant? If a person that contracts it and has this stuff in their body, could that send out a different COVID strain? I'm not a scientist. I don't know any of this stuff.
Well, Dan, we've always had the variants. We've always had an array of strains. So 6 months ago in the United States, we had 14 different strains. What happens when we vaccinate, we cause what was called a non-lethal evolutionary pressure, and we allow a dominant variant to move forward. So in this case, Delta was the dominant variant move forward. It actually was sprung out of using the Sinovac vaccine in parts of India. It sprung forward. Now, nearly in the United States, it's 100% Delta. We've never had this before. There's a report in Lancet published by Chow, just from an Oxford group out of Vietnam in Ho Chi Minh City. And listen to this. Here, they had healthcare workers. They started to have, they're all vaccinated. They started to have an outbreak in the hospital. They locked down the hospital for 2 weeks, Dan. And inside the lockdown, the workers had to stay in the hospital. They blossomed some more cases. They had a total of 16 more cases blossom, and they tested them. And it turns out those who are vaccinated, the viral load in them was about 250 times that what we expect previously with other strains. So the vaccine is setting people up to be these kind of super spreaders.
Wow. Okay, that's why I wanted you on. You always keep it real and you come with the data and the facts. Thank you, Doc. So folks, if you were wanting to resist the vaccine because you'd rather either fight to not get it, or if you do get it like me, you fight it naturally with therapeutics like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, then do that. But keep being vocal. Dr. Peter McCullough, thanks for the update. We really appreciate it. Stay safe out there on the front lines.
Well, you heard it there. I can tell you the tension is so extreme at this point in time. Patients getting sick, you can be assured that the majority of cases in the United States are Delta. The experiences that we're having is we need to use our multi-drug approach in people who present with severe symptoms, patients with underlying medical problems, and certainly all people over age 50. And it's Delta appears to be relatively easy to treat if we get going with drugs in the first day or so. However, we've had some patients go in the hospital, and let me tell you, once they're in the hospital, it becomes pretty difficult to treat, and the outcomes are not good, and I predict that we will see a rise in mortality due to Delta because patients are not adequately treated at home. Well, listen, we have a wonderful show this week, and it's really two sides of a scientific coin, if you will. One side is going to be the hard science of the spike protein, and that's going to come next. And we've invited to the microphone Dr. Fernando Crutch, and he is an MD scientist. He lives in Porto Alegre, Brazil. He's married to Valerie Crutch, who I've had on the show before. She's a leading treating doctor for COVID-19. But what Fernando does is he leads biotech development. He's one of the leading people understanding the virus, SARS-CoV-2, the spike protein, which is the product of gain-of-function research that was done in the Wuhan lab, and the antibodies and how they attack the spike protein and neutralize it. And I've asked him for his insights on a variety of questions. It is heavy science. For those of you with a science background, you're going to love Fernando because he's got it. And everything he said, he supported with manuscripts in the peer-reviewed literature. He is pinpoint in terms of his understanding on that. And then on the back side, you're going to learn from a holistic spiritual doctor, almost like a shaman. And his spiritual name is Kajari. And he reached out to me. I learned a lot from him. And as you, probably you can tell, I'm more open-minded than a lot of doctors with respect to how we can approach health and disease. So Kajari is going to give us his insights on the COVID-19 pandemic, what he's doing with his charitable foundation, how he is messaging things out, and how he's working with the conventional allopathic community to take on the COVID-19 pandemic with respect to treatment. So let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report. Are you looking for better sleep, focus, and energy? Check out Healthy Cell, the leading innovator of nutritional supplements for cell health. Most vitamins haven't been upgraded since the 1930s. Healthy Cell uses an innovative technology, which is a gel pack that provides a better absorbed vitamins and nutrients where they're needed the most. I just took a Healthy Cell today before I went out and exercised, and I can tell you I am working hard for America Out Loud Radio as we speak. And tonight, I am looking for good REM sleep. And I can tell you, I am tired and I want to fall asleep, stay asleep, and sleep deeply and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell. I'm going to use the Healthy Cell REM sleep supplement. This is the only sleep supplement designed to support all four stages of sleep. So go to HealthyCell.com and use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, and get a 20% off for your first order of any product. I use Healthy Cell, and I'm really glad that I've been introduced to it. So I recommend it for you. Again, go to HealthyCell.com and use the Out Loud code, promotional code, for a 20% off your first order. Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report.
The America Out Loud family is comprised of patriots in the true sense of the word. We know that if America fails, the world will fail. It is incumbent upon us to carry the torch for liberty and the Constitution to help save America for future generations to come. AmericaOutloud.com. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report, and I'm Dr. Peter McCullough. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the show Dr. Fernando Crutz. Dr. Crutz received his medical degree in Porto Alegre, Brazil, beautiful place in Brazil. And then he traveled to the University of Alberta and received his PhD and really became well-trained and well-positioned to return to Porto Alegre, where he started a biotech company. And the reason why I'm bringing it on the show is he is an expert in vaccines. In fact, his biotech company has had an interest in developing vaccines for a variety of applications, including cancer. And I asked him to come on the show and really take over and explain to us what is going on with the virus, the spike protein, and the variants. Fernando, welcome to the McCullough Report.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. So it's a very interesting time and a lot of discussions coming about, especially the immune response against the SARS-CoV-2 with, you know, different variants and all this that we are learning over the last year and a half almost.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. You're in the thick of things. Can you update us on the mutational classification of the spike protein? Just describe to us a bit about what is the spike protein.
Well, the first important thing is realize that what is the function of the spike protein on the virus? And this is a very critical protein. Why? Because this is what makes the viral contaminate a specific type of cell. So interaction between a viral particle and a cell are very, very specific. So this is not something by chance. This is something very, very objective and very, very specific. So when we look at the interactions between a cell and a viral particle, we need to think about almost like an antibody-antigen interaction, almost like a key and so it's a very, very precise interaction. So every time that there is a change in this key, every time that there is a change in the structure of this S protein, what will happen? It will bind in a different way into the cell receptor. So what those chains can do is they can increase affinity, so the viral can be better in lock into the cells, or it can be a mutation that actually decreases the affinity, and then this connection is loose. So every time, so when we identify the S protein, and we identify the S protein, actually, two different regions. We identify the S1 region and the S2 region. They both have a very distinct function. The S1 region actually is responsible for binding to the cell, where the S2 protein or the S2 fragment is actually responsible to get the viral particle inside of the cell. So this first contact between the S protein, more specifically the S1 protein. And if we go further and further and we try to identify inside of the S1 protein, we identify what we call a receptor bind domain. And that's a very specific sequence of amino acids that are actually responsible for this affinity between the human cell and the viral particle. So every time I have a mutation on this particular region, what will happen is I will change the affinity of this interaction. And this can have a very different biological effect. It can become more, the viral can become more contaminant. It can spread better. Or it can spread worse. So it, depending on those mutations, we're going to have difference of affinity. The other aspect, which is very, very important. So most of the people are focused on this receptor bind domain. But what happened is, in reality, we know that not only amino acids are important, but also carbohydrates. And not only the linear sequence of the amino acids, but also the three-dimensional structure of this protein. It's very, very important. So when we focus only on this receptor bind domain, we are missing very important information regarding the three-dimensional structure, and especially regarding carbohydrates that are very, very important in both phases, on the attachment of the cell and when the cell, on the viral particles actually getting into the cell. So those carbohydrates are very, very important.
So Fernando, help us understand the spike protein. I think you helped me understand that it's about maybe 1,200 amino acids in size. Yeah. It has these carbohydrate binding domains. Now, everybody knows about antibodies, that the vaccine causes antibodies, the natural immunity causes antibodies. People measure antibodies. Antibodies to the spike protein. How big are the antibodies to the spike protein? If the spike protein is 1,200 amino acids, are the antibodies tiny? Are they big compared to it?
Well, antibody molecule is actually pretty much almost the same size. It has actually more amino acids than a spike protein. But one important aspect is that this spike protein exists in the surface of the viral, not as a single protein. It's a tri-dimension. It's actually combined itself and form a structure that's formed by three different proteins that come together. And that's the reason why we call coronavirus, is because this creates actually like a structure in the surface of the viral that looks like the spike protein in the viral.
Wow, so that's the reason why it's called corona, then, that the spike protein, if you look at it on the horizon, the spike proteins make the corona around the ball.
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point.
Wow.
Now, if we look at antibody that can bind to that, then we know that the antibodies actually bind to epitopes. So antibody epitope, what is an epitope? Epitope is a portion of this protein. So usually an epitope has between 8 to 12 amino acids in terms of length. So we estimate that in the whole spike protein, there are around 50-55 different epitopes, meaning different portions of this S protein that actually an antibody can bind. So when a patient has immune response against this S protein, what will happen is we'll generate what we call a polyclonal response. So a patient will not do just a single antibody. It will actually generate, a bunch of different antibodies, so against different epitopes. So I may have a patient that may have, 30 different antibodies against different epitopes. I can have another patient that has 25 or 50 or 45. So, and this is different from patient to patient. Why? Because our immune response is different based on our HLA. So every one of us has a different MHC or HLA, and that makes the immune response different. So same protein will have different responses.
So give me an idea. So if there are, let's say, between 50 and 60 epitopes, and the human body could produce a library of antibodies, IgG, IgM, IgA, let's say 30 antibodies against the spike protein, but we also have the nucleocapsid. We have a lot of other possibilities. Well, give me your best rough guess on the number of antibodies against the entire virus? If someone's COVID recovered, what would your guess be in terms of different antibodies?
So what we found in the COVID-19 infection is the fact that there are two main proteins in terms of a humoral immune response. So there is the S protein, and we know that the S protein is very, very, very important because it's actually a way to neutralize the infection. And the second protein, which is also very immunogenic, is the N protein, the nucleocapsid protein. What is the big difference between them? The N protein is localized inside of the viral structure. So if I have an antibody against the N protein, it will not neutralize the viral because it's inside the virus. So the antibody there will not have any effect in trying to neutralize the infection. So and that's the reason when the vaccines were developed, we target the S protein because the goal was to develop a humoral response against this specific target, which is the main target. We have other proteins in the viral structure, but they are not significant in terms of antibody production. So if I have the infection, so there is a big difference, and we are finding this quite, and we'll be able to demonstrate this quite nicely, is if I have a natural infection, the patient will develop between 30 to 40 different antibodies against different epitopes in the S protein, and they will produce a lot of antibodies also against the N protein. But remember this, antibodies against the N protein, it doesn't mean anything regarding the immune response. So one of the big mistakes that we did in the beginning was to use assays that are measured, are using as an antigen, the N protein. Because using the N protein, the only information I get is, yeah, the patient get in touch with the viral, but it does not correlate with the immune response, with the protection against the virus.
Okay, so let's fast forward now to the Delta variant and the time we have remaining. Tell us about the mutations in the Delta variant and the antibodies and the amount of epitopes the antibodies have to attack in Delta.
So if we look at the number of mutations that we have so this names that we give to this viral is a complicated issue. So there's different systems that classify the mutation. So usually what happens is we can sequence the amino acids of these different variables. So we know, for instance, that in the Delta variant, there are three important mutations. And those are what we call point mutations. What is a point mutation? A point mutation is when we change one amino acid. So as we know, we have 20 different amino acids. Each amino acid has different characteristics, size, hydrophobicity. There's different chemical characteristics from one amino acid to the other. So when I have a change from one amino acid to the other, what that makes, it makes the protein, remember when we talk about the receptor bind domain? So those are very unique changes in three specific amino acids. And what that makes, it makes a difference in terms of the capability of this variant to bind the human cell. So imagine this, we said that there is 1,200 different amino acids in the protein. Now I'm changing specifically three of those different amino acids. So what that does, it does modify this receptor bind domain, But a lot of the other epitopes, remember we talk about more than 50 different epitopes, they will remain the same. So when I have a polyclonal response, and that's the importance of the disease against the vaccine. So when I have a polyclonal response, my body will develop several different antibodies against different epitopes in this protein. And they will also develop cellular immune response. But the important aspect of this, and we'll be discussing a lot cellular response, is the fact that the antibody response is always present. So if I have a patient and the patient does not have humoral response, does not have antibodies, it's most unlikely that they will have cellular response only. And the cellular response is most likely will not be able to protect the patient against the infection. So there is a lot of discussion. They say, oh, we need to measure the cellular response. But indeed, we have several publications now that demonstrating that the humoral response is fundamental in order to prevent and in order to cure the patient. So it is important to have cellular response. Yes, it is. But the antibody is major. And there is another aspect that was recently published. It says this, that the main epitopes on the cellular response are actually localized on the N protein, not in the S protein.
So that's pretty interesting. So let me ask you some point blank questions. Someone who's COVID recovered, fully COVID recovered, well-documented case, can they get Delta? Can they get a second infection with Delta?
What we are seeing this in here is, yes, they can have a secondary infection. So what we did here was actually we develop an assay where we can actually separate patients in different groups. And what we found was that the patients that have this strong humoral response, what happened, yes, they eventually will get another infection. But the symptoms will be very light. And we know, and we've been following a lot of patients. We have over 3,000 patients, 3,500 patients that we have followed. And we know that if there is a reinfection, it is always a light presentation. So light symptoms when the patient had the disease.
Okay. Now, let me ask you another question. Is the Delta variant escaping the effects of some vaccines, and which ones?
Well, that's a tough one. That's a really tough one. Remember, we have several different vaccines, and we have vaccines that stimulate different types of immune response. It stimulates humoral immune response, but it also stimulates cell-based immune responses.
We're up against a break. But I want to thank you so much for joining us on the McCullough Report. We've learned a lot. I want to tell our audience, I think Dr. Krutz is probably the most knowledgeable person on the spike protein and what's going on in the world. So thank you for joining us on the McCullough Report.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show Kedar G. And that's his name, folks. He initially graduated, he went to Juilliard School of Music, graduated from the Manhattan School of Music with a bachelor's degree in performance in piano. He went on to the Cushing Institute and studied Oriental medicine, Eastern medicine, acupuncture, and acupressure, and has logged tremendous numbers of hours in the area of holistic medicine. And he runs a really avant-garde holistic medicine training center that is a charitable organization in Ohio. And he has stepped forward, like so many of our other partners in medicine. Many of you know I'm a straightforward allopathic medicine physician, but you know I've had on the show, I've had a variety of naturopathic physicians and others who have stepped forward to face the pandemic. And so why don't you help me welcome to the show, Kate RG.
Thank you so much, Dr. McCullough. Pleasure to be here.
Well, why don't you tell the story about how you became in the position where you are now to take a leadership role in the pandemic?
It started with me being very sick in my latter teens, early adulthood. Pneumonia of the left lung, they wanted to remove my lung. I had a liver that stopped functioning, left kidney that stopped functioning, and I was extremely sick. And when I got a prognosis and then the recommendations that were particularly connected to medications that they told me I'll be on for the rest of my life, I decided to seek an alternative route and subsequently healed myself completely of those diseases and chronic health conditions entirely. They've never returned. No symptomology has returned in all of these years. And so that set me on a path of holistic health and well-being. Studied at the Cushy Institute, became very interested in how food impacts cellular health, along with meditation, along with certain spiritual practices, and also lifestyle changes, the big one that's so hard for people. And so I graduated from the Cushy Institute with, as you said, degrees in Oriental medicine, Eastern medicine, acupuncture, and acupressure. I had a 12-year practice in New York City of healing people of chronic health conditions and diseases, worst case, at least reversing them so that people could live with them. And this was everything from diabetes to heart disease to cancer. And then as a result, I felt a calling to establish a not-for-profit public charity that would be focused on educating both the public and also other practitioners in modalities that I've been successful using for so long. And so that brought me to our not-for-profit public charity. And then, so now fast forward to the pandemic, right? So the pandemic, so-called, and I have to keep saying so-called, you're gonna hear me say this, so-called pandemic arrived. And we were very, very concerned about the narrative coming out of mainstream media and our government, and saw very early on that there was something wrong with it. We began to connect with doctors on the ground here in Ohio who were telling us that they were using hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, azithromycin, budesonide in combination with intravenous vitamin C, D, and zinc. And they were reversing and curing SARS-CoV-2 infection in less than a week for approximately $85 for the week. And people were done and they went home. And then they were using it outpatient to prevent people from having to go to the hospital. And it's the first I had heard of that because of the narrative. And I was very, very excited. So we became very engaged with these doctors on the front lines who introduced me to other doctors. And we wound up setting up a research team where we began to dig down into the popular narrative that we were being handed along with what doctors were doing on the front lines and saw that there was a big disconnect. And that led us to begin educating the public for the last 15, 16 months in what's actually happening, but in particular, there are alternatives to the COVID shots. And we've studied the shots extensively. And of course, we've warned people about the risks of them. But the big deal is that people are not aware that there's a viable alternative that's been used since day one of the pandemic, very successfully, that everyone needs to be really aware of. And so having gone through all that, I saw a need to go to the Ohio State Legislature to begin talking about our findings on the research team. We had a book, The Coronavirus Era, that we had published, and we were circulating at that time as a PDF. And when we began talking to legislators, with the exception of three doctors in the state legislature of Ohio, the other elected officials, they didn't have a clue, for lack of a better word, of what was going on. So it's been a process of educating them And then by way of doing that, we've introduced two bills, the Holistic Health Choice Act to protect people's access to holistic health and healing practitioners in the state of Ohio to alternative modalities. And the second, which is a big one, which is the COVID-19 Alternative Therapies Act, which we're really pushing for. Both of these bills have a lot of traction in the state legislature. They're likely to go into committee in the early fall for hearings, and we've got backing on both sides of the aisle for them. But the big push for me in my advocacy at the State House, because I believe, and the only word I can use is criminal, that it's really criminal that at least in the state of Ohio, from February 2020, we have had 4 million doses of hydroxychloroquine in the state of Ohio, stockpiled in a warehouse, that the governor and the Ohio Health Department have refused to distribute or even talk about. That's February of 2020. We got the COVID shots here in December of 2020. In that time frame, so many people died. And that could have been prevented, in my view, if there had been a push by the state legislature, the governor, and the Ohio Health Department to say, look, we're going to try these alternatives. We don't care what Tony Fauci says. He's a bureaucrat. We're doctors, and we have doctors on the front lines. Let's go talk to them, because they hadn't talked. Before I went to the State House, nobody had been talking to the doctors who were using these therapies. They would.
Right. And, you know, I tell you, I've used hydroxychloroquine from the very beginning. I had an investigation on new drug application with the US FDA in March. I did it over a weekend. The hydroxychloroquine was flowing. It was protecting our healthcare workers. This was all above board and FDA approved protocols. And things were rolling. And we had a giant use of hydroxychloroquine in the spring of 2020. And if you go back and look at the epidemic curves and mortality curves, they were suppressed and things did not get out of control.
Absolutely.
Right. Until hydroxychloroquine was fundamentally taken away from Americans.
Right. Absolutely. And the timing of that, timed with the introduction of the COVID shots, that's when we started to see the spikes.
Well, you're exactly right. Now, the listeners should know that in every country so far, when they really get to high penetration of COVID-19 vaccination, has happened in Iceland, Singapore, and Israel, there's an absolute explosion of cases. And it's because of these variants now have immune escape. They can actually escape the effect of the vaccine. And a recent paper by Chow and colleagues from a branch of the Oxford unit in Ho Chi Minh City in Vietnam has shown that the viral load of the Delta variant among those who are vaccinated is 251 times that of previous variants in unvaccinated people. So what I'm telling you is the vaccinated patients are, in a sense, petri plates for the Delta variant. And that's what's making it so difficult. They are spreading it to one another and they're spreading it to the unvaccinated.
And they're really interfering with, you know, when I have a problem, I don't call Anthony Fauci. I call my doctor who has my medical history, my family's medical history, knows all of my underlying conditions and comorbidities, and can make an assessment as to what to do. That's the first punchline, the first aggressive criminality in my view. And the second is that it's unnecessary. We have the alternatives that work and that have been working from the very beginning. And so this business of not convening, no toxicology teams have been sent out ever in 18 months, which is absolutely ludicrous for what they're calling a pandemic. They have not convened sessions where doctors around the world are comparing notes on their treatment. They haven't had symposiums at state legislatures where they call many doctors together and say, we want to know your opinion. You are doing so great with the Texas state legislature. We need about 200 of you to be doing it. And so this is really aggression on the part of big government, mainstream media, big tech, that's censoring doctors like yourself and others, which is absolutely criminal. So now we have to start asking what's really going on. And we have to put the focus on what are the alternatives, because we have them. The one thing I like so much about you, Dr. McCullough, is that you're an allopathic doctor who really does work with naturopathic, holistic practitioners. You've got a very broad view of what works with a lot of alternatives. And that's what medicine should be about.
Well, I can tell you, you know where I got that stream? Now, I'm kind of a big time MD. I mean, I have over 650 publications in the National Library of Medicine. I'm one of the top cited doctors in medicine. I'm the editor of two major journals, Reviews in Cardiovascular Medicine, Cardiorenal Medicine. You know, I was the endowed lecturer at Harvard 2 years ago. I've lectured at the New York Academy of Sciences. I lead data safety monitoring boards for the National Institutes of Health. I'm the president of a major medical society. So I'm up there, but I can tell you, you know, the reason why I am open to your viewpoints and the viewpoints of so many other practitioners out there, it's because years ago, when I finished my residency at University of Washington in Seattle, like many graduates at that time, this is a long time ago, I went into service. So I took a post as a rural practitioner. Ooh. And myself and a gentleman from Duke, a wonderful partner, were in practice together in a rural area, which we had no help, zero, huh. Zero support. And we had to take care of people.
Yeah.
And we had to make decisions without having the ivory tower back us up, without all this intellectual support. And it was up to us to solve problems. I remember some patients would come over to my house on a Saturday morning, and my wife and I would be in our pajamas. We'd just make a cup of coffee and sit down, and we'd try to solve why the legs are swollen or why something is going on. And it was a high stakes decision when we actually had to send somebody out of our town. So I've learned on the job how to be resourceful and be open-minded to different viewpoints. And I can tell you today, I've already taken 10 distress calls on COVID-19. I've had two more since we've started. And I can tell you right now, I try to answer each and every call across the United States. I try to provide reasonable advice. I've actually advised on cases in Russia, on the interior of Russia, on Sri Lanka, India, South America, North America. In fact, I'm going to be on with a wonderful South American doctor in a little bit. I can tell you, by just reasonably talking about what can be done to avoid hospitalization and death, you can see the anxiety levels come down.
Sure.
And I don't have the powers that you have. I can't do acupuncture and use the principles of Eastern and Chinese medicine. But what I'm telling you is I think a lot of what's driving all this hospitalization and angst and despair is really caught up in this giant, overwhelming tidal wave of fear.
Absolutely. That's the disease. That's the primary disease.
That's the disease. Yes. That's the disease. You got it. It is a neurosis that is over, and you can't blame people. They are absolutely terrified. They're trying to get through their lives. They see their loved ones getting sick. They're seeing horrific things when people go in the hospital against them. The sheer desperation of people across the world is extraordinary, and your work is important. I think the fact that you've stepped up, you're not only doing this as your job, but you're stepping up and you're trying to make a difference at the legislative levels. I think it's tremendous. Do you have any final words for our audience?
Absolutely. We want all your listeners to know that on September 23rd, this is a Thursday evening, Eastern Standard Time, September 23rd at 7 p.m., we're going to be holding a live symposium online, the most effective holistic alternatives to beating COVID without the shots. We're going to be featuring Dr. Peter McCullough and another esteemed panel of other doctors and researchers. We're going to have more information for you shortly. We want everyone to join. We'll have all the information up at our new platform, holisticlivingnetwork.org, which is going to go live in about a week and a half. You'll get the information from Dr. McCullough. We're very excited because we're going to use this as a platform to educate the public and to also educate the Ohio State Legislature, and then to make the footage available for other people who want to go to their elected officials to say, you know, we have an alternative. If you're going to go as far as to strip our civil rights and our human rights by pressuring businesses to mandate COVID shots, then you've got to also mandate the alternatives so that people have a choice.
Oh, that's terrific. So, Kedar G, thank you for joining us on the McCullough Report.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's get real. Let's get loud on America Loud Talk Radio. This is a McCullough Report.